course, in the Court of Cups. And I'm pretty sure you know by this time that there's no way we're going to do more than scratch the surface of this thing. But we will make a good scratch. We will do that. So what I want to do is I want to begin by putting in front of you a portion of what we could call the mystery of yourself. You all have the Court of Cups out in front of you, I imagine? Mm-hmm. Is anybody not working with the weight deck? Okay, so because for this thing that we're going to do, it actually is useful to use this deck for a bunch of reasons, which I won't explain now. And it's also good if we're working on this matter to work with the same images. So what we're going to do now is we're going to transform this, or the Court of Cups, the regular, ordinary Court of Cups, into your Court of Cups, a very personal one, by creating an array. And you all, I'm assuming you all know what an array is, or is there anyone here who doesn't know what an array is by this time, with the things we've done up to now?
Oh, what's an array then? Oh,
let me explain to you that. An array is a small group of tarot cards that have a common denominator, like a group of court cards, or the numbers of a suit, or something like that. Any group of cards that's limited to a certain number that have a common denominator that are arranged in order of preference. Let's say, for example, if I gave you the first six of the major arcana and asked you to arrange them in the order that you like them best, that would be an array of six cards. So what we're going to be doing here is taking this small group of cards, which is the Court of Cups, that's our little universe of cards, and we're going to arrange them in the order of our preference. So what I want you to do is to look at the four of them and arrange them so that the card that you like the best of these four is on your left, and each of the other cards in descending order goes to your right. So the most liked of the four court cards is on your left, and the least liked is on your right, with a little line of four cards. So do that right away. You probably won't find it difficult, but I'll give you a minute to do that.
So I'm sorry. So the one that we like the least should be at the far end of the row to the right.
Exactly. Okay.
Got it.
It's interesting. It's sometimes an interesting choice. Has anybody not finished yet? Okay. So actually, just out of curiosity, I'll tell you, first of all, that when you have a group of four different cards, there are actually 24 possible arrangements of them. And I want to find out, just to begin with, what kind of arrays we have. So I'm just going to kind of go down the list and ask you what you've got. So, Debbie, what's your arrangement?
Queen of Cups, Page, Knight, King.
Okay, Queen, Page, Knight, King. Does anybody else have a similar arrangement? The same one? No. Okay, so, Debbie, you're in a world by yourself. Okay. Sherazade, how about you?
Okay, I have the Page, the King, the Knight, and the Queen.
Page, King, Knight, Queen. Does anybody share that arrangement?
I do. Peggy.
That's Peggy? Okay, so, Sherazade and Peggy form a club. Okay. Let's see. Okay, so that leaves us... Kelly, how about you?
Page, Queen, Knight, King.
Page, King...
No, Page, Queen.
Knight, King.
Okay, Page, Queen, Knight, King. Okay, and Martha, do you have that one by any chance?
No.
Okay, so that means Kelly is in a club by herself, and so are you. What's yours?
You talking to me, Martha?
Yeah, yeah, Martha, right.
Okay, Queen, King, Knight, Page.
Okay, the standard order, okay. The king usually comes first in the order of hierarchy. Okay, so it's close. So what we have...
I'm sorry, so that means I like the king better than I like the page?
Yeah, the king is liked better than the page, exactly.
Okay,
that's what it would mean. Okay, so we actually have, out of the 24, we have four or five. We have four that are, one pair that's the same and the others are different. One, two, three, four. Five. So we only have five people because Miyasudas didn't come either. Okay, so we have five.
I'm here.
Oh, you are here.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know you were there. Okay, I'm sorry. So, and what's yours, Miyasudas?
Basically, I have the same that I had last time.
Go ahead.
Queen, Knight, and Page.
Queen.
Wait, what was the first one?
Kin,
A king,
queen, knight, and page.
King, queen, knight, page. Okay, she has a natural order. Okay, so that's a normal. That's a natural order of the hierarchy, with the most preferred being the highest in rank. Okay, good. So this particular group of cards, and just out of curiosity, this is a spread. This is a very interesting and very complex and subtle spread with lots of information in it. Does anybody have the slightest idea what you're looking at when you look at your own? Do you know what it tells you about yourself? No. Okay. I was just wondering if you had any idea at all. But we're going to go over that. And the reason that I said to you that I was going to put a mystery in front of you was precisely that, because this little group of cards is part of a portrait of who you are in magical terms, using the certain cards in tarot as a magical reflective mirror. It can tell you precisely who you are and why you are the way you are, and what you do and why you do it, and when you'll do it, when you'll change, and what you'll do next, and all that kind of thing, on a lot of different levels with a great deal of precision. And the principles of it aren't all that difficult, but to actually get to do it is kind of interesting. By the time we're finished tonight, I hope that you'll begin to be able to read this little group of four cards, and you'll find it extremely interesting, I promise. So, there are four levels to what I want to cover tonight. And the first of these levels is where the court cards stand in relation to the rest of the deck. You know that there is a major arcana and a minor arcana. So you know that the deck is usually considered divided into two parts. The court cards are oftentimes considered to be a hierarchy all of their own. They are not really minors and they're not really majors. And there's a reason for that. Can anybody tell me what the primary difference is between the court cards and the other minors? What's the main difference? Anybody have an idea?
It's a family.
Well, it is a family. That is, the court is a family, yes. And the other cards in the other cards in his suit are not. I mean, is that a distinguishing quality?
I think they're more of the feelings that you go through within the family.
Okay. So that's one aspect of it, and it's a true thing. Give me an even more basic separation between the court cards and the numbered cards.
Well, aren't court cards more referred directly to people in the hierarchy?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. They're human, but are not the pip cards also shown as being human forms, or
yeah,
in some
not
way?
Archetypes.
No, are these archetypes? Okay, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make it easy for you instead of torturing you. The main difference between...
A change of plan.
Yeah, right, exactly. The main difference between the court cards and the others is that the court cards do not have numbers. The other cards are numbered. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of cups or whatever it happens to be. And then we have the page of cups and the knight of cups, etc. There are no numbers in the court cards. No numbers at all. Very unusual.
Well, I'll tell you something else unusual. I'm just going to interject here for a minute. I was just looking over. I jotted down what everybody said is for their array, and everybody has the knight in third position.
Oh, how very interesting. And I,
well,
oh,
and I know
yeah,
you
and
have
I do,
the
I,
knight, too.
Yeah,
I'm the
oh,
only
that's
one.
Really interesting.
I switched mine, though. I decided I'd like the knight second. But
okay,
I'll
that's fine. Yeah, you can change
it.
Absolutely.
Switch
it.
So
absolutely.
You're going to go queen, knight, page, king.
Okay.
Okay.
That's interesting.
All right. And, okay.
Okay.
But right. That, you'll see why later, why that's especially very interesting that you all share that, and mine doesn't have it there either. But
okay. So yeah. the main difference between the two divisions of the minor arcana is that one deals with numbers and the other deals with people. What's the difference between the court cards, which deal, you know, which are entirely human, and the apparently human figures that you see in the majors? I mean, if you look at Justice or the Empress or the Hangman, these are human figures, aren't they, or are they?
Yeah.
And in, is there any way in which they are noticeably, distinctly, clearly separated from the human beings that are shown in the court cards, as a class, as a group?
They're kind of like they're more like spiritual messages to me. They're not like symbols. Well, they're symbolic. They're further away.
They're further
like
away.
Deities or something.
They're like,
okay.
Like floating.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the difference. I mean, I wanted you to think about it for a minute, but because I could actually bounce around this thing for a while, and it's always difficult to know what a teacher has in mind when he's asked these questions. I've been in that position myself, and I always find myself not coming up with what the teacher had in mind, so I'm going to spare you that too. Just wanted you to think about it. The main difference between the major arcana, where they show things in human form, and the court cards, is that each one of the major arcana is completely unique, whereas each of the court cards belongs to a club or an order or a family. For example, there's not one knight; there are four knights. There are not four emperors. There's not four high priestesses. There's only one of each. Each one of those being completely unique, it describes something that can only be seen from that one place, which is the priestess or the emperor or whatever. With the knights, any knight can be seen from any one of four places represented by the suits. Any queen, likewise. And it's a very important difference. All of the court cards are seen as a fraction of the total universe that they represent. They're all part of a club. And the club as a whole, all four suits together, represent whatever the knight is able to express. But it doesn't take that many to do it with the majors. What happens with the minor arcana, the numbers, is that they're made up of a number and a name. The number refers to a certain position, a location in the Kabbalistic description of the universe. The suit is a name which represents a world. So what happens is that a number in a suit, like let's say the Eight of Cups, represents a certain position inside a certain world. Those of you who have done some work in Kabbalah have an idea about that. Those of you who don't, who haven't done that work, may not know what I'm talking about. But what happens is that the minor arcana are usually a set of coordinates. It's a place inside a world, like finding Paris on the map.
Can you say that again?
Yeah. So in other words, each one of the suits represents a whole universe, a whole world. And each number in the suit represents a place in that world, a location, an actual location, a spiritual location in a spiritual universe. Each one of the suits is a separate spiritual universe, so you have four completely different universes, and the numbers represent different locations there. The major arcana are completely, they're made up only of a name. Well, they just have a name. That's all they have. There's justice. That's it. There's the emperor. All it has is a name. It's described entirely by a name.
What about the number?
The number is an attribution.
Okay.
It's not part of the description. It's not part of the structure of the card. There are lots of attributions. One of the things that they had as a problem over the years when they were trying to settle how the deck was to be arranged was which one of the major arcana belonged with which number. It wasn't by any means a sure thing. There are different ways of organizing the major arcana, and it's only over a history of a couple of hundred years that different magical groups eventually arrived at an acceptable common arrangement of the deck. And to this day, there are decks that are not quite arranged this way. In the French decks originally, I don't know if it's still true in the Marseille deck. Well, in the Marseille deck, for example, the Fool has no number at all, whereas in our decks here, it's numbered zero. In those decks, it actually was placed between Judgment and the Sun. No, it's between Judgment and the Sun, I believe. It was not quite the 20th. No, it was between Judgment and the World, I guess. It was the 21st card out of 22. for some reason or other that I can't remember now. And there have been other arrangements. In fact, there are actually, I believe, even now, there are decks that number the major arcana differently than what you're used to.
Strength and injustice are almost always, it can be reversed.
Yeah, absolutely. So the thing is that the major arcana are really definable only by their name. And their name places them in a relationship of one space to another space in the different universes. They're paths between locations. They're not actually locations in those universes. They're the ways you travel between locations in those universes of the suits. That's another Kabbalistic thing. The court cards are name and name. There's the name of a rank, and there's the name of a suit. And the court cards are actually blends of different worlds. There are two different universes blended in every court card. Each one has kind of got a whole... It's a way of taking things that are normally not blendable at all. I mean, there's no way normally that cups and swords and wands and pentacles have anything to do with each other. Left to their own devices, each one would float off in its own place. There's nothing to hold them together, except for the court cards. The court cards blend the suits, just like taking white paint and red paint to make pink.
What do you mean by blending the suits? You mean because you're going to have four knights, you're going to have four pages?
Well, what happens is this, that you have, let's say that what we're working with tonight, we're working with the suit of cups, right? So the suit of cups is one particular universe, and it's called cups. It's given this picture, the picture of the cup, and it's connected with the element of water, and the world that it belongs to has a certain name. It's called creation, the world of creation. Now, this world of cups has in it a knight, a queen, a page, and a king. Now, each one of the ranks of the court cards, each one of those four, is connected with a certain suit. So let's say we're talking about the Knight of Cups. It just happens that the Knight is connected with the element of fire, where Cups is connected with the element of water. So a Knight of Cups is actually a blending of fire and water. And the qualities that belong to fire are mixed and blended with the qualities that belong to water. And the result is an extremely complex and subtle mixture of things that allows certain things to happen. It's literally like taking a pot of water and putting it over a hot fire, and the result is boiling water. It takes cold water and warms it up. And each one of the major arcana is like that. It blends two suits together. The queen is normally associated with the element of water. So a queen of cups is water for the queen and water for cups. So it's water and water. It just stays cold and wet. Very fluid, very cold. The king is usually associated with the element of air. And air is usually considered warm and wet. So what happens is when there's a king and it's the king of cups, because the wetness stays the same, and the only difference is the warmth, the king of cups tends to warm up the coldness of water. It doesn't heat it up as much as the knight, but it warms it up somewhat. And it blends air and water and makes bubbles. And when you have the page is usually connected with the element of earth. So when you blend when you have the page of cups and you're blending earth and water, what you get is a kind of clay, wet earth. And out of that clay, you get the ability to mold and make solid things.
Because I'm sorry, well, the knight is what?
The knight is connected with the element of fire. So what you've got in the knight of cups is fire and water. The page of cups is earth and water.
Earth, okay, thank you.
Yeah, the king of cups is air and water, and the queen of cups is water and water. So what happens is in each one of the suits, the blending of a rank and a suit actually puts together two suits, puts together two elements, and mixes them. And that's what generates the energy and the cohesiveness of the whole tarot deck, is the mixture and dance of these elements together. It's a very magical blending, and without that mixture, tarot would fall apart. the different parts of it wouldn't hold together.
Walt,
yeah.
Would you mind telling us the suit of cups, it belongs to the world of creation.
Okay, now let me
what
give you...
What are the other...
All right, let me give you the other four worlds, the other three worlds. I'll give you all the worlds in order. There's an order in which it is said that the universe was created. First comes the element of fire. The first element that comes into the universe is fire, and it makes it's said that that's the first one because it's the spark. It's the wish to exist. It's that flame that sparks in the darkness that makes the first thing happen. It's initiative. And everything that happens comes as a result of that spark. The second thing that happens, but the thing is that spark is just pure energy. If it were left to itself, it would either fade away or it would explode endlessly to no purpose.
And that's absolute, right?
Excuse me?
And that's absolute?
In the Kabbalistic terminology, that would be called Atzilut, and it's spelled Atziluth. The way we usually describe that is emanation. It's the world of emanation. Literally, things emanate from the divine source, whatever that is. Everybody has a different idea of divinity, but whatever your idea of it is, the way in which the divine source starts to become the universe starts with a spark of fire. And then that explosion of energy needs to be contained. It needs to be given a shape, a form. And so we have the element of water comes next. And the element of water is in the world that is called creation. The Hebrew word for that is Bria, B-R-I-A-H. And what happens is that the fire of wands, the fire of the beginning of creation, gets contained in the cup of water. The cup gives it shape and contains it and makes it useful. So fire and water have that relationship to each other of explosive force and the contraction of containment. And between the two, the world happens. If there was only one or the other, the world couldn't exist. So wands and cups. And then the third world that comes into existence is the world of swords, which is the world of air, the element of air. And the element of air is associated with a world that's called the world of formation, which is called Yetzirah in Hebrew, Y-E-T-Z-I-R-A-H.
Y what?
Y-E-T-Z-I-R-A-H, Yetzirah. And it literally means formation. And that world gives limits to things, definitions to things. It tells you where things begin, where things end, when things start, when things finish. It tells you how big a thing is, how small a thing is, how far away it is, how fast it is. It gives you all of its qualities as measurements. It measures all of the shapes and forms that come into existence through fire and water. If you didn't have those measurements, you would never know whether you were looking at something in its full size or looking at something expanded or looking at a model of a thing, you would never know. If all you had was a shape and you didn't know how big it was, it wouldn't be very useful. If you didn't know when a thing began and when a thing ended, how would you know what you were looking at? Everything would blend into each other. All the edges and would become fuzzy. So what happens is that swords makes everything sharp, clearly defined. It breaks things up into little pieces, and then it joins them together in ways that make sense, which is how it is that swords is connected with language. Words themselves, by the way, are containers of meaning, and they belong to the world of cups. But the way that words are joined together to make sense is belongs to the world of swords, and all the connections between separate things. Grammar comes from swords. Syntax comes from swords. But meaning comes from cups. And then the last thing that comes into existence is the element of earth, which is connected with the page. And the world of earth is called the world of Asiya, A-S-S-I-Y-A-H. And it means the world of making. Actually, Asiya means making, but they usually call that the world of manifestation. When Earth happens, it makes everything solid. It means that every single individual thing is unique. Note, so in other words, even though, for example, all of us have the human shape, I mean, every human being has the same shape, approximately, the same basic design. And although every human being is measured more or less in the same ways, I mean, it's approximately a certain amount of height, a certain amount of width and depth, you can tell that. And you could have two people who are exactly the same height and weight. You could have them defined, you know, by swords in very much the same way. Even if everything else were identical, if you give two different bodies to things, they are completely and forever unique. Each one of the things that has a shape and a definition and an energy, when it finally achieves a solid existence, it becomes itself and nothing else. And so it's possible to have many individual things. These are called objects. And so you have the objective universe. You have the world that we see in front of you all the time.
So is this pentacles?
That's pentacles. Pentacles gives everything its unique, separate existence. You know you can't put two solid objects in the same place at the same time. They just don't fit. Everything has to have its own place and its own time when it finally achieved pentacles. So now what you have is these four worlds, but unless the four worlds were capable of being blended together, they would all drift apart and they wouldn't be able to hold together, and the universe as we know it couldn't exist. So what happens is that the court cards, by means of connecting two names, the name of a rank, which is a shape, and the name of a suit, which is an energy, they produce a union that takes a human form. It's given a human form because that's the symbol. The whole universe is understood to be created in the shape of a human being. God is given the shape of a human being, the universe is given the shape of a human being, and the human being is the shape that supposedly, in magical terms, expresses both creation and the creator, which is why human beings are seen to be such magical and magnificent creatures. And the court cards are a picture of that magical blending of above and below. So it's actually quite an amazing thing that you have when you have the court cards, and only the court cards do that. The numbered cards don't accomplish that, and the major arcana don't accomplish that either. So you're looking at something quite amazing. And so, in a way, you could say that the court cards are a third hierarchy, a third arcanum. So there's the minor arcanum of the numbers, the major arcana that you know about, and then there's the arcanum of the court cards. And arcanum, by the way, means secret. And the court cards are definitely a secret all by themselves. And how they dance with each other, that's the dance of the universe. And that's the dance of people who live together. That's the dance of society. The dance of history, the dance of psychology. It all can be found in there. Okay? Now that's just the first level that I was going to talk to you about. And I don't really have time even, there's a lot more to say about that, so I just want to give you that as an overview and an introduction and something to think about. Before we go any further, are there any questions that come out of that?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because then if the major arcana are pathways between these worlds,
mm-hmm.
It's so interesting that they're like qualities of God or whatever.
That's exactly right. They're just like
that.
That
come in,
mm-hmm.
And give us an idea. I mean, I don't know. I just have so many things flowing into my head.
I know.
The question is just like,
The idea that the major arcana are the qualities of God is actually a very interesting one, because they're also the qualities by which we understand everything. So in a sense, you could say that the major arcana are infused with the perceptions of God through the majors. The way in which the various parts of a tarot deck are joined together as a magical whole are so beautiful. It's such a breathtakingly beautiful structure that sometimes it leaves me speechless, which is kind of an odd thing, you know? That doesn't happen to me very often. But sometimes when I sit by myself, I can't even say what I'm seeing. It's so amazing. But anyway, we need to get on to the second thing that court cards are about. The second thing I want to tell you about is the structure of a court card. Because a court card looks like a picture, but actually the picture almost doesn't matter. You know that there are lots of different decks out there, and they all have different pictures. And sometimes when, like for example, I asked you to choose the cards in the order that you like them best, I didn't tell you why you should choose them the way you choose them. And it may very well be that whatever you chose last is because you just don't like the way it's drawn. And if you saw it in another deck where it was made prettier or something, you might like it instead of dislike it. The pictures change, but the essence doesn't. And I'm going to give you the essence of the thing. The essence of a court card is mathematical. There are two basic divisions in a court card. And this is something you should probably take notes on, because you won't remember it if I just tell it to you and you just think about it. One aspect of a court card is rank. Knight, queen, king, page. Those are ranks. They don't by themselves have anything to do with the suits. They are just who they are. So the first thing is rank, and the second part is suit. There is a rank, and the rank exists inside a suit. There are two names, no numbers. The rank is the form, the suit is the energy. The energy flows into the form and gives it life.
The rank is the form?
The rank is the form. For example, if you're a knight, the knight is the form of it.
Okay.
Knight of cups, the cups is the energy that fills the knight. So the suit is the energy, the rank is the shape or the form. Then, each of those, the rank has two different parts to it, and the suit has two different parts to it. Each rank is made up of two basic considerations. One is maturity, how old it is. The king is considered to be old, the queen is considered to be old, or at least adult. The knight and the page are usually considered to be younger, and age usually goes from top to bottom. The king is the oldest, the page is the youngest, in general. Not always true, but in general. And the other aspect of the rank is gender. Some of them are male, some of them are female. Obviously, the king and the knight are both male. Obviously, the queen is female. The page, actually, in magical terms, is supposed to be female. Even though in this deck, the page was given a shape that would allow it to be any young person, male or female, in the family of the court cards, the page is generally considered to be the princess, the young woman, or the female child.
Well, did you say that the queen is the eldest?
The queen is the elder female.
Oh, okay, but is the king the oldest of the cards?
Actually, if you were going to, I would, my personal feeling is that king and queen would be essentially the same age, or
okay,
you know, the same age range.
Okay.
But the knight and the page are not the same age range. The knight is considered to be older, the page younger.
Okay.
If you were going to give a general approximate age to the page, you're talking about childhood, anywhere from infancy through childhood up to early adolescence. The knight usually takes you from middle adolescence up until early maturity, you know, maybe to 30 or so. Everybody has a different idea of it. Some people think the knight ranges from 17, 18 to maybe early 20s, but actually the knight can go as high as to the early 30s. And the king can range anywhere from the early 30s at the earliest all the way to the end of life. King is a mature male. In general, that is true. Not always true, but in general, it's true. So those two things make up the rank, maturity and gender. And then you get the suit. The suit is also made up of two different things. One of those things is the esoteric aspect, all the different magical attributions and associations that go with a suit, like the ones that I mentioned, the elements, the worlds, you know, the directions, the times. Like, for example, you probably know that that the suit of cups is the element of water. You may know or you may not know that it's connected with the part of the year that is called the autumn. Of the four seasons, it's connected with the autumn. Of the four times of day, it's connected with sunset. Of the four directions, it's the west. There are a whole bunch of associations, and those are called magical associations. There's also an astrological association with each of the suits. There are a whole bunch of things. That's one thing. So there's the esoteric attributions is one part of the suit. And the other part of the suit are the psychological associations. So the psychology and esotericism. Psychology, there are two kinds of those also. There's a magical psychology and what we could call a modern or a scientific psychology or usually thought of as Jungian in these days. In magical psychology, you have the four magical organs associated with the four suits. You have the spirit or energy. You have the heart. You have the mind. And you have the body. Spirit, heart, mind, and body. Those are the four magical aspects of the psychological being. The Jungian equivalents to those, what people nowadays would find comfortable and easy to accept, are intuition where we talk about spirit. The heart is thought of as feeling or emotions. That's usually associated with cups. The mind is obviously associated with the idea of thought. The Jungian association is thought. And the magical association of body in Jungian terms becomes sensation. All the sensations of the body, the sensations and the appetites. So, again, rank is maturity and gender. Suit is psychology and esotericism. And so you're blending all four of those things in different ways with each one of the court cards. And give you a general idea of what, say, maturity is made of. Okay? It's kind of interesting because sometimes you may or may not be able to see these things easily. Now, the king is usually understood to be the most mature and complete of the four court cards. He's the head of his house, the head of his family, the head of his hierarchy. He's the most powerful member of his family. He has the most authority, the most control. In his suit, whatever the suit is, he is its most developed expression and its most successful example. I mean, the King of Pentacles is the most successful of the Court of Pentacles. He's obviously male, and he's obviously the dominant male at that. And if the court were a family, as I mentioned, the king would certainly be the father. And some of the functions of, you know, the father in the life of the family would be protection, provision, you know, to provide for the family, instruction, direction, and the maintenance of order. Those are all things that the king could be expected to provide, regardless of what suit he was in. All the kings do that. And of course, there are some negative things that go with that as well. I mean, authority could be tyranny. Success that we expect of the king could become arrogance. His maturity could eventually become stiff and weak and old. Hi, did somebody just join us?
Good evening, it's Marcy.
Hey, Marcy, come on in. We're in the middle of stuff, so just kind of listen in.
Thank you.
So, the knowledge of the king, where the king is supposed to give instruction, his knowledge could just become rote. It could become very stiff stuff, just very formal, with no real understanding in it. But whether a quality of a king expresses itself either positively or negatively, you know, kind of depends on what's going on, you know, in a spread or a reading. Now, the queen, like the king, has qualities of maturity and completion and authority and success. She's got all of those things. And she's a ruler, too, just like he is. Now, a queen who inherits a throne, in history anyway, is the exact equivalent of a king. And any man, if she marries somebody, the man she marries doesn't become king. He becomes a consort, sort of like in England these days. Queen Elizabeth inherited the throne from her family. She married Philip, but Philip remains Prince Philip, and he says her consort. He doesn't become King Philip. She inherited the throne, so she's the ruler. But if a queen marries a king, if a woman, even if she's a queen in her own country, if she marries a king, if the king and queen exist together and the king has inherited the throne, the queen usually is secondary. This is the second in rank to the king. So when a queen appears alone in tarot, she rules as completely as the king. But when the king and queen appear together, she might take a second place. And of course, the queen is female, where the king isn't. Where the king is direct, the queen is indirect. Where the king thinks, the queen is intuitive. Where the king is logical, the queen is psychic. And the queen's special strengths are warmth and empathy and delicacy and tact. She's patient, beautiful, subtle, and discreet. All those things are true of the queen regardless of what suit she's in. And of course, in the family, she's the mother. She's a nurturer, a healer. She's a mediator. She settles arguments and problems between people, and she's an advisor. And she creates order and comfort as the mother in the home. And she shares with the king the functions of being a provider and a protector and a teacher. She does all of those things together. And that's the difference between the king and the queen. They have certain things in common and certain things that are separate. The knight, of course, is male, but he's the younger male. Just like the king, the knight has a faith in strength and knowledge and logic and directness. They both believe in those things. But the knight is looking at goals, whereas the king is involved in achievements. The knight is looking outside himself. The knight goes for quests. The knight is ambitious. The king is a finished being. The king is done. The king has had it. The king has, you know, proven himself. But the knight still remains to prove himself. The knight is in process. The knight's life is ahead of him rather than behind him. And of course, he's always pictured as being on a horse. He's moving. He's mounted. He's a symbol of change, unlike the king, who is on a throne and has already arrived. The king goes wherever he needs to be, huh? Yeah, the knight is on the go. The king sits there and waits for you to come to him. So in the life of the family, the knight is the son. And then we get to the page. We mentioned that the page can be considered just a child, but usually in magical terms, she's considered to be female. And like the queen, the page is intuitive and beautiful and subtle. And she has a grasp of social and emotional nuance. I mean, the page always knows what's going on. I mean, there's a quality in both children in general and young women in particular that is very sensitive to social and psychological nuance. Children know a fraud when they see one without even knowing how or why. You can't really fool a child very easily because they're very direct. The fool is the page actually tends to live in the moment. Right? Now, just like the queen, she finds her existence inside herself. She is not looking in terms of quests and things. She's not looking for goals, not even achievements. The page is involved in pleasure and the fullness of the moment. She's curious, she's playful, young, and where the knight is in process, the page is potential. Nothing's happened yet. It's all waiting to happen. She's glowing with the strength of the moment. And in the family, of course, she's the daughter. And since she is the lowest in the hierarchy, she is shown as standing. The kings and queens being at the top are shown as seated, and the pages are standing, because obviously that's a sign of respect in a court. Those are just a very few of the things that that make for the nature of rank. I'm talking kind of fast. Does anybody want me to repeat anything, or do you have any questions about any of that?
Just by the tape, I ran behind.
So yeah, by the tape, it's all there. Actually, there's an awful lot more. I mean, I'm just giving you a kind of a brief outline of things. All the things I've talked to you about so far are just about the rank itself. We haven't even mentioned the suit yet. Okay, I can tell you also now. Well, let me leave the astrology aside for the moment. Some of you have an astrological penchant. Some of you don't. We may or may not have time to go into that. So let me do the suit first, and then I'll give you the astrological attributions later, if we have time. In the suits, what we have, we mentioned that in the suit of cups, for example, we'll work with the suit that we're working with now. The suit of cups, we already mentioned, is connected with the element of water. which is cold and wet. It's got the qualities of being flowing. I don't know how many of you think in terms of the female or feminine as being warm. Anybody feel that way generally? I mean, if you were going to pick, if you would say, let's say we said one is warm and one is cold, one is hot and one is cold, one is male and one is female. Would you say that hot goes with male or female? Anybody?
Male. Yeah, hot is yang, right?
Yeah, well, hot is yang, generally speaking, right? And hot is associated with the element of fire, and also with the element of air. They're both considered to be hot, or at least one. Air is considered to be less hot, but still warm. The feminine suits, the round suits, are cups and pentacles, and they are both considered to be cold. Water is considered to be cold and wet. Earth is cold and dry. Those are things to remember when you're looking at the court cards, when you're trying to match them up. So, for example, if you have a knight of cups, you're mixing a fiery form in the form of a knight with a cold form in the form of cups. So you have water that's being heated, water that's being brought to a boil. That's what we were talking about before when we were talking about blending.
I guess water and earth too are fall and winter. So
that's right.
Colder months.
Exactly. Exactly. So when you're looking at the esoteric attributions of the suit, for example, we're looking at west. I don't know how many of you would be able to find west if you were in a dark room. Where would west be if you were in space? Where would west be if you had your eyes closed and didn't know where you were?
Behind.
Huh?
Behind.
Actually, it is. And I'll tell you why it's... Do you have any idea why it's behind?
No, I just remembered from one of our classes that I am always facing east if I'm in space.
Right. Well, here's what happens. In magical, whenever you're doing magical work, or at least ceremonial magical work, there is a temple that is created. Either it's a temple that doesn't actually have to be physically a temple. You can make your living room into a temple. And what happens is that it is said that when you are beginning a piece of magical work, you are supposed to be facing the east. There's an altar that's usually set up in the middle of the space, and you enter the room. The room is usually square, or the space that you create for this temple work is usually square. And when you enter the temple, you enter from the west and you face the east. It's said you're supposed to face the east when you're doing temple work because the east is the dawn. The east is where things begin. And so you face the east. So when you're doing any kind of work, when you're doing anything important to yourself, and you're at the beginning of that thing, and you're facing a chore, a task, a great undertaking, anything that's really important to you, magically speaking, you're facing east. And you enter from the west. The place that you enter a thing from is the west. So you sort of enter from the place of the heart, and you look towards the mind as a beginning. You look to the clarity of the mind for a beginning of a process. The base that you stand on, the place that you come in at, is the place of the heart. To your right is wands. To your right is fire. To your left is earth. To your right is the summer. To your left is the winter. To your right is wands. To your left is pentacles. So what happens is that when you know that you're looking at cups as being the direction of west, if you know temple work at all, you'll realize that west is behind you. West is the point of entry. And that connects the point of entry with the heart, which means the place that you actually start from. Not the place you're going to begin the work at, but the place that's before the beginning is in the heart, which is also associated with the cup. So when you're looking at the court of cups, what you're looking at in general, the whole court, you're looking at the place of the heart, the place of entry into the world of magical work. You're looking at not the beginning of a magical process, it's the place before the beginning. It's the source of the magical world. And so wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you can orient yourself to the directions from a spiritual point of view by knowing what's behind you and what's in front of you, what's to your left and what's to your right. The right hand is fire, the left hand is water. I mean, not the left hand, I've said the right hand is fire, the left hand is earth. The right hand is summer, the left hand is winter. The right hand is warm or hot, the left hand is cold. What's ahead of you is bright, what's behind you is soft. Sunrise and sunset. What's on the right of you is noon. What's on the left of you is midnight. And all of those things are associated with the suits. So when you know, when you're looking at a court card like the ones that we have in front of us here, if you pick, for example, the King of Cups, in the world, in the universe of creation, you're looking towards the east. The King is the east, air. The King is the beginning in all the suits. The King is the place where the sun rises. The Queen is the place where the sun sets. The Knight is the place where things are in full swing. They're in full bloom in the place of the Knight, in full tilt. And things have come to an end in Pentacles, in the Page. The Page is the conclusion, the ending of everything, the final, last word. So you're beginning to see, perhaps, now take a look just for a moment. We haven't really got there yet, but take a look for a second at the array that you did. The four cards as you laid them out to begin with. And I'm not going to try and read it for you, but take a look at what you chose first in terms of beginning and ending, night and day. Did you begin with dawn? Did you begin with midnight? Did you begin with sunset or sunrise? Because the first thing that you chose is your strength. And I'll describe that to you later. But just to be aware of that for the moment. Very interesting stuff all around. All right. Anyway, do you have, before we go any further, are there any questions about this stuff? Yeah.
So the one is the strength. The first card is the strength.
Your first choice out of four is that place where you are strongest. Yes. Most naturally competent.
Your talent.
You got it. That's it. And then if you understand what's in that position, you know what kind of talent, what kind of natural strength you have, and what people are most likely to see in you as well, what you project outward into the world. That's your most public face. Before we get into that part, let me give you a little bit of a general description of each of the cards in the Court of Cups. Just a kind of a brief look at it. What is normally understood by the Page of Cups, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, a Page of Cups, one of the things about a Page of Cups is the Page of Cups lives in a magical world. The Page of Cups is young, spontaneous. One of the things about the pages are that they're spontaneous. They don't have much in the way of plans. They don't, not much in the way manipulation. They're not big on planning. They're much more present than that as a rule. And spontaneity in the world of cups has a tendency to produce imagination. The page of cups is the kind of child who would have hidden or imaginary friends. Who would see elves and gnomes in the garden, who would believe in fairies and fairy tales as though they were real. What we think of as real excludes what the Page of Cups naturally understands and sees. And only later on, when the page grows into a slightly older person and has been squeezed by the adult world into believing what the adults believe, then the Page of Cups reluctantly has to place all that she had believed in once upon a time into a box like a little toy chest and put it away as childish things. And no longer are elves and gnomes and fairy tales real. They become imagination. What the Page of Cups sees as real, the adult sees as imaginary. So realize that the Page of Cups lives in a much richer and more amazing environment than an adult does. very interesting thing. There's a lot more that could be said about the Page of Cups, but that's certainly one of the things.
I have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I have the page at the end.
Uh-huh.
And you just described me.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I'm highly criticized because I'm always talking about the fairies.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
the world of...
Mm-hmm. There is, in order to know how it is that the page could, that the page being last could still describe you so clearly, you have to understand what the last position means, and we haven't got there yet. So wait a while, and I'll try and explain that.
Okay.
So then you get to the Knight of Cups. The Knight of Cups is an interesting character, because he's a bringer of dreams. The Knight of Cups is a grail seeker. The Knight of Cups is a romantic. He lives in dreams and he lives in fantasy, and he carries messages from the hearts of ordinary people. And he promises to come back. He promises to come back with what magnificent things he finds in his adventures. But the problem is that he doesn't go very fast, and he kind of enters lives and he leaves them behind, and he doesn't come back very often. The Knight of Cups makes promises that he can't keep. Doesn't think that at the time. The Knight of Cups is very sincere. But the Knight of Cups is a heartbreaker.
Unreliable.
Not because he intends to be. It's not like he's a liar. He just can't do what he says he's going to do. And he's so beautiful, and he offers such magnificent promises that he can awaken love in the heart of whoever he comes to. But then he goes away, and you never see him again. And you remember the magnificent things that the Knight of Cups offered you, promised you, told you about. And he leaves an echo of delight and a belief in great things. And he leaves a certain sadness in the memory of his passing, but he doesn't come back. And I'm sure most women have met a man like that somewhere in their lives. And they're very nice men to meet. But it's a lost cause, I'm afraid. The Knight of Cups, in a way, is a lost cause. He fails even himself in the end. But he's the one who knows where the heart is. He's the one who knows where you can find it. He's always on his way there. And even if his journey fails, because he knows where he's going, because he's going to the heart, it's enough to make us love him. Can't help it. He's a poet. He's a lover. He's a visionary. He enjoys beauty. But he breaks the heart. He seduces. And he's a sensualist. He loves the body. And he can really waken, you know, sensual joy in anybody that he's with. So he's quite an interesting character. A blend of fire and water. And then we get to the Queen. Now the Queen is the image, the exact image of your heart's desire, of every man's heart's desire for sure. It's the outpicturing of every lover's inner longing. Whatever you've ever wanted as a lover, you find in the Queen of Cups. She's the face on every beloved. She's what you want to see. She's got the power, the force to attract two hearts together and make two souls into one soul. She's got the power to join and to bind in love two things into one. She makes two hearts into one passion. She makes two bodies into one delight, two souls into one glory. She makes two lives into a single destiny. Through the Queen of Cups, people get together. And when two people are joined like that, she makes the whole universe beautiful just by being herself. Well, thing is, she's sensitive, she's intuitive, she's introspective, and she knows how to make sacrifices. But she's an enchantress. She's coquettish, she's capricious, she's changeable. She's like the summer moon, full at one moment, dark at another.
She sounds hormonal.
Huh? Totally, absolutely. She flows with the tide, sometimes up, sometimes down, sometimes in, sometimes out. You can't really hold on to her. She flows like water, and just like you can't hold water in your hand, you can't hold her either. Now remember that from this point of view, she is an archetype. She is a description of a generality. She's not an actual person, although you might possibly be able to think of people in your own life or public figures who remind you of these characteristics. Anybody think of a Queen of Cups in public life? Or anybody in your own life that you might know that could be described like this? Somebody who is capable of arousing love and desire and
Elizabeth
a sense of
Taylor?
Beauty.
Huh? Elizabeth Taylor?
Elizabeth Taylor has qualities because she's certainly beautiful. She's certainly a seductress and an enchantress. And she certainly has the power to awaken in a man, possibly in a woman too, the sense of the beautiful and the wish to be joined together. I know when I was a kid, I just loved Elizabeth Taylor. She was my absolute favorite. Because literally, just because she was so unbelievably beautiful when she was a child. When I first saw her, I saw her in National Velvet when she was, I don't know, 14. I think it was her first picture, but I'm not sure. 12 or 14. She was so absolutely exquisite that she just made you melt. So that is certainly what the Queen of Cups is about. Total, complete beauty. She's every shape that is beautiful. And then you get to the King. The King is really an interesting character.